but also because I speak rootly the message of Africanism. So Pan-Africanism, you know, so that really helps a lot to connect with the people with the same understanding. So my creativity is, you know, my work is deeply rooted within Africanism or Pan-Africanism. So therefore, the need of us communicating of who we are, you know, and those people always found me.
I like that. Your tribe will find you.
Yeah, and you will find them.
But you have to be communicating or, you know, sending out something to the world. Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
And I'm your other host, Carol Williams.
It's how are you doing, Carol Williams?
I'm so good.
I'm good today. I'm good.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm back. I'm back from the war.
We are back. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you made it.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you. Every month I survive this war.
Say no more.
Is it the war of art?
Yes. Ooh, yes.
Or is it the art of war?
Oh man. Today we are talking about growing a community of allies. Who's in your community?
I have a great community, I think. I have got friends who have followed similar paths. Josh is actually one of them, one of our guests today. And I think I also have colleagues who I would consider allies.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes even friends who haven't necessarily walked the creative career journey, like as a creative, but who have been very supportive of that journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who come to your shows, like when you first start out and buy tickets and you know, it's like so orkies because you like don't actually know what you're doing and you send these things out and they come. Like,
So. And I find that a lot of us sometimes make the mistake of relying on too few people to be our community.
Yeah, we like, please come to my concert for the seventh time.
I realize that even though my friends are obviously some of my community, they are not my professional community and I can't expect them to come to every show.
So good,
But the people that come to my show are also not in my personal life, but they are also my community in that sphere.
Yes, so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that you've recently gone back onto radio. And
Yes.
That's like another community, actually.
Yes. I know. That's, there's like Frank. I don't know where it's
can
from
I be
or what
Frank?
It looks like. No. So we have a WhatsApp line and they can message you while you're on air. Mm. And so far, Frank, every Sunday, will say
he's
hi.
That's cool.
It is.
That is cool.
Belonging is a human need. And throughout history, community has been the glue that holds people together, whether it's a sports team, a subculture who likes the same music, or simply your family. And in creative spaces, you know, we can feel free to express who we really are. But, you know, when we compare, that's when the despair comes. Mm. And you might be at risk if you suffer from a lack of confidence in a space where there is so much talent and competition.
Yes. And comparison is such an easy thing to do, like comparing journeys, comparing like your work. Yeah.
The thief of joy, as my grandmother used to say.
Your wise granny.
But it's kind of hard not to, you know, because I feel like there's obviously people that you look up to when you enter into a career. And I don't see it really as comparison, but it's just like I see their journey and I see similarities maybe in my own journey and maybe I want to get to that level. So is it really comparing then?
I guess, I mean, I think there's a difference between comparison and inspiration. And I think being inspired by people, that the energy of that is positive. You won't feel worse about yourself.
Okay.
You'll feel like, yay, I'm like so amped to go and do my thing. And I feel inspired by these people.
Yeah.
And maybe comparison is something that cripples you.
I see.
And makes you feel worse about yourself and like you don't want to try.
Nicely put. Look at you today.
I'm so wise, guys. Get out your pens, take notes.
Right. Mm. And, you know, being a part of a community of like-minded creative allies can make all the difference in your mental health. And it can actually boost your creativity and give you connections to work opportunities. But where do we find like-minded folks to connect with? on a personal level and on a professional level. Mm. To help us explore the value of community, we've invited artist and fashion designer Nyambo Masamara and songwriter-producer Josh Prinsloo to share their stories. Nyambo, you're a multidisciplinary artist, fabric and fashion designer who works in a range of media and across platforms. You've created the brand Masamara, whose brightly colored and patterned garments celebrate the harmony between the past and the present, traditional and modern. Thank you so much for joining us.
And can we have a moment just for your outfit?
I want one now.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And thank you so much. Honestly, it's such a pleasure to be here. I've always, you know, found a joy in sharing my journey or how we got here.
Yeah.
You know, so it's such a great pleasure. And thank you so much for taking time to invite us.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. We're also joined by Josh Prinsloo, a singer-songwriter, rapper, and multi-instrumentalist music producer, also known as Fruit Vendor. You've worked with brands like Pokemon.
Amazing.
Okay, let me do that again. I did not expect that one.
I'll catch them all.
Pokemon, Philips, ETV, and a range of businesses on audio branding. And you've performed with the legendary David Kramer. Great to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here. I think this is freaking awesome.
Yes.
So stoked.
Yeah.
To be in a room full of fellow creatives, man.
Yeah.
It's my favorite type of place.
Yeah, I think Creative Allies is going or is becoming an institution, really, because all the other industries have institutions. You know, if you're a lawyer, there's a bar to regulate. And I suppose you can't regulate creativity. But what I'm trying to say is that there's no hub where we can all just come and share information. You sort of, in our respective journeys, discover things by fire or force.
Yes. You know? So true.
True.
And lots of tears often.
Yeah.
Lots of tears. Yeah. So let's kick it off from the beginning. We'll start with you, Nyambo. We hear that you studied business management. How did you end up there? Because that's, you know, obviously not kind of where you are now.
Yeah, actually, I did study business and marketing, but then, you know, creativity was always there. You know, throughout my whole life, I've always been very curious. I've always, you know, been that child who was always out there. Come from a big family of 14 siblings.
Wow. Oh, you are number?
Number 5th.
Okay.
You know, so.
So you're somewhere in the elders.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. It's a very big family, beautiful family.
Mm.
That really sparked, you know, my ways, you know, of life. You know, the creativity came from there, trying to always look different and be different amongst the whole siblings, because we're almost about the same ages, really.
Mm.
So right after my studies, couldn't really move in that, you know, world. You know, I tried, but the calling was too loud and was too strong, and I had to answer the calling.
I like how you say calling, and a lot of people say that, you know, across different industries that they
come up quite a lot.
Yeah, they feel called to do something. But is it a voice? Is it a what? Can you describe when you realized you were being called to be who you are now?
To be honest, in the beginning, I never knew what it was, but it's always there, because I've always been very, like I said, very curious, very creative. So I've always, like, my way of life was always creativity. But later, when I found a voice, I realized that actually my grandfather was a tailor, my mom was a textile designer. So it was that that kept really coming through,
sure.
You know, without even knowing what that was.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
It wasn't really like, you know, as it is, calling it fashion, calling this and that, but it was more of like finding myself to that constantly, you know, and then with more answering questions that people kept looking, you look different, you look this, you look that. And then I realized actually this is what I was meant to do, because it was always been there.
And the universe is always giving us signs of who we are. And it's almost like a remembering of who you are, because you come in already like that. But then because we are in the world and there's these all these systems that try to box us and you try to fit in and you don't fit in. And it's like, no, remember this. Remember who you are. So thank you for answering your calling.
Yeah.
It's such an honor. Honestly, it's such an honor that the fact that now I'm living, you know, the calling and sharing it with the rest of the world is such a beautiful thing. It's really one of my greatest moments.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Love that.
Josh, how did you pivot because you started with drama and then went into music. So tell us firstly how you knew that you should study drama, and then in the midst of that, then you decide, no, actually music is my thing.
So I actually didn't pivot, eh? I've still continued to do both.
Ah.
In my mind, I had this idea just to be a creative artist. Like, that's just what I wanted to do. So yeah, my initial thing was actually fine art. That was what I was really feeling like, that was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then I ended up playing the lead in my school play. Mm-hmm. And my teacher encouraged me to, you know, pursue acting and see where that might take me.
Mm.
And so when I got to university and enrolled as a undergrad, as a drama student, I kind of at the same time enrolled myself as a music student. Kind of, I made my own curriculum, basically,
yeah.
Because the university didn't offer both of those mediums side by side.
And they should, because...
They totally should.
That is often like an overlap. Yes. Like people who are good at drama are often musicians as well.
Mm. And often they're quite good at business too. You know, mm-hmm. That's what I've noticed. A lot of these CEOs and things are actually, you know, playing...
Musos.
You know, musos. Mm. Yeah, it's wild. So what I did was, when I was studying, I sort of had my day doing my drama degree, and at night I had night classes in music. And by my second year, I was playing professionally as a musician, and every waking moment was being creative, which was exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so my whole career up until now has been a juggle between these two mediums, because they, as Carol so rightly said, there's so much overlap, and I just continue just to sort of take things as they come. So it's really been a really fantastic journey of embracing it all and not shunning one. Because when I was at university, one of my acting lecturers, who's a truly accomplished actress, she was like, hey, you know, I was hanging up posters for a gig that was coming up that my band was about to play, and she stopped me and she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, hanging up posters for my upcoming gig. She's like, listen here, man, you're going to have to make a choice between whether you're going to want to be an actor or whether you're going to want to be a musician, because you can't be both.
Mm. Yeah.
And in my, part of me on the inside was like railing against that. But somehow I managed to do both. And it's been fantastic.
You know, on that note, haters are very important, you know.
Shout out to your old lecturer.
Right? In every creative's life, when you come to that point where you're multi-talented and multi-skilled, there will be someone that says, hey, you can't be everything. You can't be a master of all trades. Stick to one trade. And you're like, but I'm good at all of them. And then it's
or like, I'm interested in all of them.
Yeah. And then it's kind of like you have to decide who you are in that moment and then resist.
Totally. Because also, like, that advice is not always the best advice.
Yeah.
Because it expects you to kind of like put to bed something that might just be just be a spark or an interest in it. They kind of expect you to just be about that one thing.
Yeah.
We have actually found that actually it's all of that. All of that is the one thing.
Yeah.
That's what I found.
Yeah.
It's like broadening out the definition of what these things look like.
Yeah. Are you one of those musos that play every instrument?
I play all the rhythm section instruments, yeah.
What does that even mean? I'm not a rhythm section. Is there a part where there's... I've got so many questions.
So basically, it's the traditional four-piece band. So that would be your drums, bass guitar, guitar, and keyboards.
Yeah.
And then I'm a vocalist as well. So
look at you.
Yeah.
Multi-talented.
I just, you know, I just kind of... You see, the thing that I suggest to a lot of younger creatives is, man, just explore it all. Explore it all, because what's worked for me is being able to do it all has always allowed me to kind of come in through the back door on projects where they're like, oh, well, I actually know a guy who, you know, he's an actor, but he also plays keyboard. And then it's like you're in there, you're kind of in there illegally, but now you're in.
Yeah.
And as we all know, sitting here, is like one thing leads to another. So.
Yes.
The fact that I didn't sort of like shun it all and, you know, choose just to be an actor has actually been great, because it's meant that I've, you know, I've always had work in one way or another.
So good.
Beautiful. Nyambo, let's talk about the early days of your career. First of all, what did they look like? And then how did Masamara come about?
I'd say my early days was one of the challenging moments, you know, especially like we said, coming from a studying of business and management, then venturing into a career without a formal knowledge or without any training, you know. So it was always really one of those challenges where people always like, you don't belong here, you know, you don't have enough to prove yourself. So it really took everything within me to prove the people within, you know, the creative industry that I had something to say. So one of the ways that I actually did it was always an interesting one, because then I came out through flash mobs, you know, everywhere.
Wow.
So I've done any event that ever happened in Cape Town without being invited.
Yeah.
You know?
So
that is so
all
smart.
All of them, you know, we're talking from, you know, because I knew what I had, you know, as much as I didn't have formal knowledge, but I knew there was something in there, because people kept really, the real people, the ones who matters, kept looking at what I was sharing and like, there's something in here.
Yeah.
You know, the questions that kept coming to me made me believe in what I was doing.
Mm.
But then there was no platform to really tell those stories.
For
you know, I had to make sure that I invite myself.
Yeah.
So we're talking about...
I like that.
Invite.
I had to invite myself.
I love that. Wow.
Because sometimes, actually, most times as a creative, you're not going to be invited into the room. Not if you don't know anyone, in any case. And especially if, like you say, maybe you didn't go the traditional route and come from a design school. Or
you didn't like have those connections, you know, already. Yeah,
exactly. And so you have to make the space for yourself. So when you say flash mobs, did you just like pitch up on the runway and start walking? My goodness.
You did hijack the whole event.
I did. And sometimes now I look back, I mean, I feel some type, you know, I really feel bad, you know, for some of the designers that I had to, you know, just
interrupt it,
literally, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And but I had to do it. You know, I really want to do it, because there was no
Did
any
they kick
other
you
ways.
Out? Because I can't, I mean, fashion is highly curated. They know exactly
happens.
Who's going when, and you know, so did you go before the designer or did you go in the middle?
I remember this one time I went to this platform. It was SMN's Fashion Week. You know? I went there. There was a designer already showcasing. I went there, the whole media and everyone literally just turned around, because, I mean, you can tell, very bright, very colorful.
Yes.
I've always belonged in different, you know, in within the people. I didn't really follow the normal convention way.
Yeah.
So even the models that I showed, I brought on were really, really different from what was being shown. So media, everyone really looked around and they all, it felt like it was the same show, but different angle, you know? So people turned and started looking, and then the media, I mean, the organizers came, they were about to throw me out, but the cameras are already on me.
Yeah.
And then they stopped.
They can't embarrass.
You know, they just had to take it in. But 5 years later, I was one of their main designer of the show and closed the show. The same event where, I crashed.
Yeah.
I ended up becoming one of their greatest designers.
Wow. So that is
amazing.
Quite a story. That is great. That is sticking it to the world.
Okay. You have to go for it, you know, because no one's going to give it to you. Honestly speaking,
that's true,
it's one of the harsh reality.
Yeah.
If you do get a chance, of course, some people, you can get that help. But if not, you have to find the help yourself. So it was one of my routes.
And something that I just want to reflect on quickly about that is that you were ready for the moment of being recognized. You know, you can't go and like gate crash something like that and then not have the work to back it up.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to have something to show.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
definitely,
you obviously knew that you had that. It was just like you needed the opportunity to showcase it.
There was a work before that. I had to prepare myself for those moments, because I was like, as soon as I'm there, once they see me,
you have to answer,
you know,
the questions.
I have to be ready. You know, I have to be ready. So I have to prove them. And that's what happened. So you have to do the work before even just, you know, presenting yourself to the world or to anyone. Yes, preparation before anything.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Josh, there's a problematic saying, especially in the performance art sector.
The industry.
The industry. Yeah, very scary word.
The industry.
The industry.
It's problematic to me anyway. It says, those who can't do, teach. Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then here you are, a professional musician, but you're also a teacher. First of all, answer to this problematic question, what you think of it, and how did you get into teaching, and what did that teach you?
Well, on Yambo's point, I come from a family of teachers.
Mm.
So both my grandparents were teachers.
Mm.
My mother is a teacher. All the women on my mom's side are teachers. So I never really had an issue with it. It was always like if I got invited to share something, I'd be there to share what I can. If there was knowledge that I could impart in some way. In terms of like just being ready to teach or embracing the medium, it's just always, I've found that when you teach something, that's actually when you learn it.
It's so true. And also because you're repeating it.
And also like a lot of, especially for artists, we absorb a lot of our information or the things, the technical knowledge that we know about our medium, we absorb it almost by osmosis, depending on how close you are to it, like the proximity of it. So when you teach it, you actually now have to break down how you got there. And sometimes you have to backtrack and go, wait, I don't remember struggling with this. So now in order to communicate that to the student, you've got to put yourself in their shoes and look at it from their perspective. I always just find that when you're teaching something, somewhere along the line, if the student is receptive, it comes back to you, which is the amazing thing, is that they come back and they're like, wow, you actually, you know, you taught me something that I haven't been able to find. I don't teach anymore, like informally.
Yeah.
But I've had old students come back to me, reach out over email and, hey man, are you still teaching? We'd love to reconnect. So I reconnected with some of my old students about a month ago and it was great.
Yeah.
And there was nothing to it. It was just like, hey, we want to hang.
I really appreciate good teachers. A teacher that sticks out in my life, and I talk to Carol a lot about this because I have this laugh and it's very distinct. And I remember being in grade 7 and it was an end of the year play and I was the witch in the chorus. I didn't even have a main role, but being a witch meant I had the hat and, you know, I already stick out.
You were noticeable.
And, yeah. And there was a part in where I just had to laugh. That was my line.
Oh, wow. That laugh.
No.
Give us a demonstration.
Yeah, it was something like...
That is terrifying.
It is.
Now put the word the industry in front of it.
Yeah. And she, as soon as I did it, she was almost like thrown back. She was like, wow, you're such a great performer. And nobody had told me that because I'm naturally just like a walking performance. But nobody had said, hey, this is actually
this is something you're really good at.
There's something there. And oh man, I will forever remember Mrs. Wilson. And yeah, thank teachers. Anyway, Nyambo, a lot of your references come from your cultural background. Could you shed some light, firstly, on your cultural background and what communities you feel a part of and how they support you as an artist?
Yeah, I was raised in different countries on the African continent. So I grew up in 10 countries.
Wow.
Continent.
Sure.
That's
so
what a life.
It's a full life. It's a full life.
Yeah.
But I think always that trying to fit within the community, that's what brought me to actually finding myself. Because then with different, you know, cultures, different communities, I had to figure and try to understand their ways of life, how they do things. But then when I realized actually once I become me and then my community will find me. And then I started literally just embracing, you know, my differences, embracing my way of life. And therefore I realized that I belonged, you know, other third culture kids, people started finding, you know, me, other people who, you know, grew up in one country or from different races, then started finding me. And yeah, I would say there are the people who support, but also because I speak rootly the message of Africanism. So Pan-Africanism, you know, so that really helps a lot to connect with the people with the same understanding. So my creativity is, you know, my work is deeply rooted within Africanism or Pan-Africanism. So therefore the need of us communicating of who we are, you know, and those people always found me.
I like that. Your tribe will find you.
Yeah, and you will find them.
But you have to be communicating or, you know, sending out something to the world. By the way, Nyambo is like a burst of color.
Unreal.
All the colors in the world. In the world. Nyambo has them on. And it's so, it's beautiful. Done so intricately because also, you know, speaking about design, design also has rules of what you can mix and what you can't mix.
What colors you can mix together.
Nyambo has defied all those rules.
It's so beautiful. I'm laughing because that was actually also one of the challenges because everyone always said no. You know, you're too colorful, you're too bright. You know, literally, like, you know. But the beautiful thing now, any work, anything that I get, it's because of those colors. Yeah. People are like, the way you put colors together.
You've defined a style.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they're always like, there's that harmony within colors. Because some people, we fear what we don't know. Mm. So I had to make sure that I show people, actually, if these colors can come together, people can come together. Mm. So I use that in order to communicate the differences, you know, diversity, you know, within us. I mean, look at South Africa, Rainbow Nation, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it makes
sense. How profound.
I love that, so, like, deeper meaning to your work as well. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Josh, you've obviously worked with some big brands. Before we get into this question, how the heck did Pokemon come about? Because I'll tell you why I'm so interested. Obviously, I am the Pokemon generation.
Oh, yeah. Me
and,
too.
And discovering that Pokemon in your chips was all the buzz.
It was.
Primary
school. Tezos.
They call Tezos. Tezos. And then at some point, our parents were like, it's satanic. And then it was like, it's a cult.
Yeah.
Don't watch Pokemon.
That was the beginning of chainmail messages, you know. Like, I remember a kid in my school was like handing out like the, you know, why you shouldn't buy Lays because of the Tezos. You know, like handing it out, like doing the legwork of like.
How did that come about?
So very interestingly, it came about and further to Nyamba's point as well is the whole thing of like the way you present your medium, your art in a visual way. That's pretty much the how it came out. Like I had a video online of me performing, just doing a vocal performance in my studio. And the guy from Pokemon who was working on the project, they're compiling a collab album for the 2024 World Championship, Pokemon World Championship.
Mm.
And he just reached out to me as, man, I've got this project and I love your style, would love to work with you on this.
Did you think it was like spam?
Like, no. I'm quite used to that kind of thing. Because also, like, if it's a non-spam message, there'll be a lot of specificity behind the brief. It's like, okay, we're going for this, because he kind of said something like, we're going for this Beastie Boys sound, rap metal vibe. Do you think you can do it? Love your work, love your portfolio. And what's interesting is that style, or my personal style, much like Nyambo's, was people kind of like spoke against it in the beginning. They were like, what is this? You know, what is Fruit Vendor? Like, why don't you think about singing, you know, Afrikaans pop songs, or try doing this. We don't understand this. And what I found has always worked for me, like historically, is just doing my own thing and just owning it.
Yeah.
And I found that online, especially if you can present that in an eye-catching way that is like straight to the point, it gives a potential client an immediate idea of what it is that you can do. And also, by the way, that whole thing happened online. So it was, and so a lot of my work is just done online because the world is completely flat now. It wasn't always the thing, you know, but I found that especially now after the pandemic, it's just like there's no question about where you're from. Where you're from is actually the selling point, but it doesn't matter that you are in South Africa or in Africa or wherever. So I've done a lot of that kind of stuff. And again, one thing just leads to another.
Mm. The flat earthers are going to love you for that. Wow.
Well, I was looking at Nyamba's jacket there and it says, immigration is beautiful. Destroy the borders.
Migration
is beautiful. Destroy
all the borders.
All the borders.
I love
and
that.
And it's kind of like,
That's kind of what you're saying though.
Yeah, that is exactly
around your work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's allowed me to come into spaces much like Nyamba, where I wasn't invited. I just invited myself just by virtue of showing up.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And also like having the work to show.
Yes.
Yes.
Like I know some of your journey, but it's like you've curated such an incredible portfolio. Like you've challenged yourself around learning different genres and being able to play all of them. Yeah. Like it's a huge amount of investment, like in both your cases. And to then when the Pokemon opportunity comes up, you can actually say yes and know that you can deliver.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is, like, I was ready for it. Like I was, I've been recording myself since I was a kid. So of course, through process of continually doing the thing over and over again. I mean, I've done a lot of songs that nobody will ever hear, or it is somewhere online, but nobody's listening to it.
Yeah.
But the fact that I did it just adds. Yeah. So you're kind of like, through the process of this repetition and putting it out there, you're actually presenting or making the capacity for the thing, for when it's ready to arrive, that you're ready as well. And that you're able to take it with both hands.
So good.
So something our emerging creative listeners will want to know, and I don't think it's just only them, it's all of us. Can I make a living from my art? controversial. Nyambo, this one is for you. What percentage of your income do you earn from fashion, and how much from selling artworks, and do you have other income streams? Of course, you don't have to give us numbers, because that's your privacy, but are you paying rent through your art?
yes, I am paying rent, and other people are also living off my work.
Wow.
So it's not only me, there's like quite a big team. People behind, you know, what I've created, who are living off that. So it's such a, definitely you can make living off your work, your art, but it has to be more than art. You know, you really need to understand, of course, there's an element of art, but there's also element of business that comes with it. Then, because you can make beautiful things, but if you're not able to put it out there or to sell it, then it becomes a harder thing. So yes, we can. In terms of percentages, I would say 60-40, but the fashion is more of the steady income. But then the art also actually, it serves as that investment, because the money comes within a chunk of, you know, a lump sum of money. So that helps quite a lot. Yeah. So it's balances. It helps one another. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Amazing. Amazing. And do you, Josh, have any other income streams that are nothing to do with your profession?
No, I'm just a full-time music producer, a voice artist, actor, and whatever. It hasn't always been that way, though. This is definitely the last couple of years has definitely been the best, I think, financial season. But it hasn't always been that way. And it was definitely not something that you could tell your parents early on. Like,
Because it is seasonal.
Yeah, it's seasonal. Yeah. But also, like, you learn, like Nyambo was saying, like, you learn that actually there has to be an element of commerce. There has to be the professional business person that comes out as well, which we, when I went into it, it was just about the art, you know. But you quickly learn that if you're just going to be about the art, you're going to end up like some of, like, I've got a lot of artistic heroes, local heroes, who are not well off financially. They didn't save, they didn't do the normal regular thing that regular folk do,
the due diligence around finances.
And so when we so when we get those horror stories, or we get people coming against us in terms of, hey, why are you doing this thing, you know, you're not going to be able to survive, I've had that question many times, like, well, is there a career in it, or, you know, and it's because of those horror stories of like artists who have, people who are household names but doesn't have a penny. And so I've just learned that just cover the business angle and just make sure you show up professionally. I learned that early on, at least, you know, it wasn't like I knew from the get-go, okay, I actually have to turn this into a form of commerce. There has to be some sort of monetization happening.
Monetization. We are in 2025 for sure. How can we monetize this?
Exactly.
Josh, you've also said that you view storytelling as a transformative tool. What do you mean by this?
I think my life has just been about story. Like, I think my earliest memory of being an artist, if I were to sort of condense everything that I've done down, like music aside and acting aside and all of these things, it's always been about story. So when I was a child, my favorite thing to do was, I think all kids actually play with action figures, but I was big into action figures. And I was more in love with the story that I could come up with for these action figures. I used to get frustrated with other kids when we're playing in tandem and their character does something that's off script.
That's like, excuse me.
Yeah, or their, or their character is like jumping through the air, but I'm like, at which point did your character gain powers that defy the rules of gravity? You know, you have to, if you want to get from here to here, you have to walk, unless you're Superman. So I used to get frustrated with that, but now when I look back on it, it's just like, oh my gosh, I've been a storyteller. And then it's interesting, running theme here today is my family are a bunch of storytellers. My parents come from small town where there was no form of entertainment other than telling stories. So in terms of it being a transformative tool, I've come to the conclusion that the story that you tell yourself, is specifically as an artist, as a creative, if you're going to tell yourself a bad story or if your narrative
is a struggle story,
a poor artist, I'm a struggling artist, then that's going to be your reality. If you're going to tell yourself a success story, or the narrative that's running is like, hey man, I'm a business person, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm an innovator, I'm a trendsetter, then that's what you're going to be.
I love that. Yeah, what story are you telling yourself? Because, storytelling is human nature. That's how we pass on information. That's how we, come to know about things. And very often we're not listening to ourselves on the inside because we're talking and and it's so important to also give yourself that talk of who are you today. And I find it's a daily conversation because days are not the same. Some days the world is on top of you and some days you're on top of the world, but what happens in the in between? So I guess what you're saying, Josh, is that every day you have to tell yourself this thing, that I am this thing and this is what I'm going to do. I am this thing. I am this thing. No matter what is happening around
100%.
You.
100%. And do it repeatedly to the point where it becomes like it is now the thing that you believe. Yeah. You've trained yourself on it. Yes. You programmed yourself on it. Because again, like other artists maybe aren't those many healthy spaces for where artists get together and they're actually like, hey man, the industry is great. The community is great.
Complaining.
The money is, and the thing, and I used to get into places like that and was like, man, come on guys.
It's all of that is true, but it's like, what are you going to focus on? And what is in your sphere of control?
Exactly.
Like a lot of that stuff that you're complaining about isn't actually, it's kind of stuff outside of your control.
Yeah. I had a hangout session with someone that I really look up to a few weeks ago, and I asked him how they funded their projects, and they were doing it in the 80s. And he said that, I asked him, were you guys applying for grants, funding? Was this all personal funding that went into it? It was like 100%. It was all, we funded our projects out of our own pockets. And everything was done like a normal business is done. You put capital in, you put on the event, you run it. But for some reason, like for our local artists especially, it's like we're looking for funding, we're looking for grant. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but when those things don't come through, then your medium or your practice is completely like
dead.
Dead.
And then you have those and you come into situations where artists are complaining about, government is not funding this and this and this, we don't have the sponsors, and it's like, does that mean you're not going to do the thing now?
Because also art, like Nyambo said earlier, there's art, but there's also, it has to be something more that you are also trying to do, because that's the purpose also of art, I suppose, on a human level, is what are we getting from this art? Is it healing us? Is it making us laugh? Is it, getting us over the certain obstacle? There is a purpose to the art. Speaking about art and community, Nyambo, you have a team obviously behind you. What does community mean to you, and how did you find your community now?
So again, it's like I said, so with the way I found my community is through me understanding who I am. With that really helps much to have like-minded people. Often one of the craziest things is that wherever I am, there's always, it's almost like what they say, build a garden and then butterfly will come, So if you really chase after butterflies, we never catch them. So that's literally what I've done. And then with also my team, it's just that, really just building ourselves, making sure that we are ready to share whatever we have within us.
Yeah.
And then people find us from there. So we've built a garden and people keeps finding us. It's the beauty of it. Yeah.
Lovely. Awesome. Speaking about gardens, I would love to be a garden person, but I am just failing miserably.
Yeah, it's like, I'm really good at planting plants, less good at keeping them alive.
Yeah. It bothers me so much because everyone's like, oh, I'm a plant mom, and I love plants. Of course I love plants. You're oxygen.
Are you?
I just don't have the green fingers. I'm thinking, I've killed like 3 cactuses so far.
You have to really try. Yeah, you have to really try hard to do that.
We're trying. That's what matters.
I love that. Build the garden and the butterflies will come. It's lovely that you see your community as butterflies. Because I think in the sense that, you know, those days where your story is not a positive one that you're telling to yourself, the community then has to step in and remind you that, hey, this is just a terrible day, but you are not terrible.
And you don't have a terrible life.
And you don't have a terrible life. Yeah. And there's so much going on in the world. And there's this trend. I don't know if it's just my timeline, but even the jokes that we're telling are on the negative. Like, you know, people, you know, talking about waking up and being tired to go to work. I can't believe I have to do this. And I miss the positivity of, oh my goodness, I get to wake up. I'm alive. What
it's
are
like
we going to do today?
Reframing. It's like, I get to do this. I don't have to do this. That's something, exactly what you're saying, that I've also been thinking about a lot, where it's like actually working and having work to do is such a privilege.
Yeah.
And yes, you're going to have times where you don't feel like doing it. That's normal. And maybe you're going to have, you know, you're going to be doing stuff that you don't necessarily buy into sometimes. That's also okay. That's also part of the journey. But it's like even how you frame your language around stuff. Mm. It's like, I don't have to do this. I get to do this.
Yeah.
And that like starts shifting how you think about things, because then it's not like this chore. I'm not like a victim in my life.
Yeah.
I'm a participant in my life.
Yeah.
And that's like a big shift, I think.
I read an amazing story of an artist. I'm forgetting the name, but I think they're a playwright. And there was a time where work had dried up, as it so often does. Or, you know, the seasons come where you're not, you know, working as much, which then also affects your finances. And she couldn't pay rent. And so her community gathered up, but she was still, you know, working on this play. And she had told them that this is what I'm working on, but it's just the puzzle is not fitting.
Not quite there yet.
And then there's this big thing, and she was telling them, no, she's going to move back home because life is just really tough and she really, you know, can't deal with the stress of the bill part of life. And they gathered up together as her community and paid her rent for like 6 months.
So that she could complete the project.
And she completed the project and it became this great, you know, piece of work. Then she was able to then live off of. And I feel like that's what's missing in our community.
Wasn't that Harper Lee with To Kill a Mockingbird?
I'm not sure. I think it was.
And imagine the world without that. Without that piece of work, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Is that the only book that she ever wrote?
Like, I think so.
And that's like a sort of magnum opus, but after that she was done.
She was good.
Yeah, and it just made me think of when we speak about community, we're living in a world where everyone is on some don't catch feelings, catch flights, or isolation.
Like, don't invest too much and like don't care
people,
too
don't
much.
Don't trust people. And it's like, The machine doesn't function like that. We need each other. Everyone is needed in this thing at different levels, at different times. And the message is that you cannot do it alone. You cannot, because Masamara is not Masamara without the team behind. Josh is not Josh without, you know, the team behind.
Tell us about your community, Josh, and how have you built that? And how do you think about community?
I've always been about getting artists together. Even when I was a student, the best thing was hanging out with other artists. I had a jam session that I curated, just kind of like when in my early 20s. And it was, I come from a jazz jam culture. So that is very much a shame culture. It can be, depending who you're jamming with. But I remember creating this event and it was open to all artists. And if you were a beginner, you could come through and read your poem, come and play the few chords that you could play on the guitar, you could come. And then we would have guys who were playing professionally as well as like a backing band. And it didn't always go down well, you know, like if you're doing it in a restaurant or, you know, like a coffee shop and people come there and it's bad. The owner kind of looks at you with a skew eye, you know, but I just love that. And I love where the conversation was going now as well, is that for me, it's always been about my community. It's always been about, I've always, for some reason, wanted to curate these spaces. I think it's because my mom, she was also a musician, and we used to have people coming over to our house because she was a church musician. So we'd have people come into the house to practice for Sunday. And my mom was just like, this is an open house. While you're here, we might as well, you know, hang and tell stories. But okay, let's work on the repertoire. And in terms of the community thing, I've got a group of people that I have on WhatsApp, just a small community of guys that we chat about all of these kind of things. Jerome Rex is in there. Yeah, we just share about like what's happening, life. What our life. It's been so nourishing and essential to have a bunch of creatives who are also family men, you know, who are so also good. Married and have kids. And it's like, it's a different perspective. And I mean, I've done crowdfunding and I've done Patreon as well. All of these things where you have a community gathered around your message or your art, and they're even supporting financially. So whenever I've got a new project that I want to fund, I go to the audience, you know.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. That's amazing. For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and creativity workshops also provide more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes and join our WhatsApp community. We'd love to welcome you.
So you will have heard at the end of some of our episodes that we ask you to like and subscribe. The reason that we're doing that is because we would love you to be part of our growing Creative Allies community. And by liking and subscribing, it shows that you firstly like us, which is good, right?
Very good. Very good. I like to be liked. I like liking other people too.
There we go. And it also means that any new episodes or any new snippets will download to your phone immediately. So go on and hit that subscribe button.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, everything.
So as part of each episode, you'll know that we have a question from our Artist Alliance community. And today is such an awesome day because we've had some of our Artist Alliance community in the studio with us as we've been recording. And so we've got Tanatswa joining us in the studio. So hello to the people.
Hey, how's everyone?
Hello.
Hello. Good to have you here. And Tanatswa, I believe you've got a question for our guests.
This one is towards Massa. Do you think that your lack of fashion education gave you a creative edge over other people? Because it's mentioned that you use colors that often aren't put together or matching. While some people say that sometimes education takes away from creativity rather than nurtures it.
Oh, beautiful. And I mean, I wouldn't know about like the formal education, but what I know within coming from informal, what it did for me was allowed me to look outside the box. You know, I was free and I had to learn from, you know, different people. You know, I had to learn from everything. So basically the universe was my teacher. I had to make sure that I look and absorb as much as I can. So there wasn't really one way of doing things. I just had to dive in and just be a sponge.
Great. Do you have a question for Josh?
Yes. I wanted to ask, I come from a lot of geek culture, often at Comic-Con as a vendor and stuff. What actually attracted me to come here today was that you've made music for Pokemon before. Yes. And like listening to the numerous brands you've worked with, do you feel like being a master of all trades, because you can't say you're a jack of all trades, has helped in your growth as a creative or impeded it? Because we're often told to niche down.
I think it's helped fully, 100% it's helped. I think you can't know ahead of time really what the thing is. You only know it through the doing. So the more you do and the more your kind of life takes you on these paths, and then because I went through many different, since you're a geek, you'll understand multiverses. So like I had so many parallel things going at the same time where I was able to dip in and out of them. And I feel like when I come back in retrospect, I'm like, whoa, hold on. All of that has actually contributed to what it is that I'm doing now. I mean, the fact that I did a job for Pokemon, even that like is a full circle moment because I grew up with Pokemon. I love comic books. I'm kind of considered a nerdcore rapper. So it's like I'm in that.
That's very niche, Josh.
Yeah, that's very niche. I'm in the nerdcore niche. But then locally as well, like I'm in a sort of like a, my own category, and you just lean into it. You know, if you're going to specialize, great. If you're not going to and you're still figuring it out, that's also okay. You don't have to know beforehand.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
So we gave you a little project to do.
A little bit of homework. Mm-hmm.
The challenge was to be your own creative ally and write a letter to your younger self. What words or advice did you need to hear when you were at the beginning of your journey? Nyambo, let's hear from you first.
Dear Nyambo, you've always seen things differently. With the eyes that notice more and ears that listen deeper. Trust that. Your ways of seeing is your gift. Mm. Let your heart be in sync with your soul, not with what expected of you. You are never meant to blend in. You've always been brave, curious without needing a reason, creating before even you knew it was called art. Even when it brought resistance, you stayed true to yourself. That was never a flaw. Mm. That was your power. Keep choosing your own lane. You are not lost. You are becoming. With love, Nyambo, Masamara.
Goosebumps. It's like my favorite part of every episode.
Oh, yeah, same. Josh, what did buddy little Josh want to know?
Okay. Dear Josh, you're at the beginning of an exciting and most adventurous story. Your artistry is a multifaceted tapestry of disciplines and mediums. An ever-expanding universe made up of your unique creative DNA, the fruit of which will give you a platform and bring you before kings and great leaders. Many will try to discourage you and talk you down and talk you into being more like them or try to conform you into pursuing average, mediocre, boring, or mundane. They say you're too much. They say you don't fit any boxes. They want you to stay in a lane. They want you to follow the well-worn road. But this is precisely why you need to lean into more of who you are, more of who God has called you to be. Your life is a song story, pages and pages of lyrics without end, a collection of songs within songs. Each of them deserves an audience. Your quirks are your true superpower. Embrace them as you unabashedly follow your insatiable curiosity, building a creative life in all things. Make no excuse for your art, but don't blame anyone if some of it doesn't land or if your work gets ignored. This is all part of the process. Make products and learn how to sell them. You are an artist and therefore an entrepreneur. Fully embrace the mind of a businessman, but always keep your integrity intact and keep your name clean. Be prolific and aspire to excellence, but remain humble and teachable because those who don't fall off quickly, become bitter and complain to everyone around them that the industry sucks. Ingest the works of great thinkers and voraciously read from all kinds of books so that you'll develop the wisdom to apply what you've learned laterally across many domains. Because of this, you'll build the capacity for wealth and your bank account will never run empty. Make friends and allies who share this vision. When you do, you'll build a circular economy where all boats lift on a rising tide. Mm. Josh, you're in it for the long haul. You're a lifer. Whatever happens, do not give up. You'll thank me later. Your art is your fruit. Oof. Share it.
That's so bars. Beautiful. I had a little rap there. I was
Where's my snare? Where's my snare? I have no snare on my headphones.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing, Josh. Thank you. Super.
Thank you so much to both of you for being generous with your time, being generous to share. It's always such a pleasure getting into the minds of some of the creatives we really love. And we wish you onwards and forwards.
Yes. Ooh. All of the best.
No matter what.
No matter what.
No matter what.
We'll see.
Great, guys. Yeah.
Cool.
This is beautiful. Oh.
Yeah.
I think I found my other tribe.
There were so many synchronous moments there. Hey?
Yes. You know, and later, it feels like, you were talking to the young me. Yeah. So it was such a powerful letter, you know? Yeah.
If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to listen to other episodes in this series. We speak with more inspiring guests about their career journeys and challenges and give you valuable and practical advice. Listen for tips on cultivating a healthy creative brain, how to set boundaries, navigating AI and tech, and handling tax as a freelancer and more. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel or find out more about Artist Alliance on our website. Both links are in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.
As always.
A true joy.
Oh, light of my life. Apple of my eye.
Apple of my eye. Bye.
Bye.
The V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program created the series in partnership with Two Stories, podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing and engineering by Rebecca Van Zyl, and script writing by Linda Scarborough. The music for the series is composed by Jude Brown, and episodes are recorded at Sonic Nursery Sound Studios in Cape Town.